offer a couple remarks. The first is that we've got this reminder today that the Christian story is just that, it's a story. It's of course not just a story, but it's at least a story. It's more than a story, you know, it's at least a story. And like any good story, well, okay, it's a really, really long story. We have to admit that. But like any good story, you're not going to understand parts unless you understand the whole. Right? You know, you ever pick up the middle of a book somewhere, your kid's reading or your grandchild's reading a book, and you're like, I wonder what this book is about. And you pick it up, and it's like, I'm really not sure what's going on, especially with today's authors. At least that's been my experience. Pick up some Brandon Sanderson if you wonder what I'm talking about. The Way of the Kings. Just pick it up any place and start reading. You have to invest time in the story to know what you're talking about in any given place. But unfortunately, many of us fail to do that with this story. And this is more than a story. It's a saga. It's a collection of stories. It's a multi-volume series that begins at the beginning. That's the way this story starts, in the beginning. And we're talking not in the beginning, Johnny was a little boy kind of beginning. We're talking about the beginning, capital T, capital B. Before anything else, this is what occurred. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then we end incomplete in part because of the vision. The ending of the book is really trying to get us excited about what's coming next. But in between, there's this massive unfolding of a story that has a certain coherence and logic. And like all good stories, there's foreshadowing, there's symbolisms. You know, like, again, an author might use different techniques for this. They might use the color red, for instance, in a way that you don't pick up on as a reader unless you're really careful. But in this story, we got just a snippet. This is more like a trailer that we heard today. Not quite, because we do get a little, we slow down right at the Gospels, right? Right at the beginning of the Gospels, right at the Christmas part of the story. But it's more like a trailer. You get some highlights, right? Just like, and if you don't know the rest of the story, you don't know where these things fit. But we started with, which every good story starts with, the main plot driver, right? The problem. You remember this from high school English? You know, the story's going to bring about the resolution, but there's the problem. There's introduction of the characters, and we jumped over that introduction of characters, but we get the problem, and the problem is, and it's this somewhat comical, somewhat tragic, very sweet in some ways, picture. God shows up to hang out with Adam and Eve, his creation, and they're hiding from him. And it's like, oh, what's going on here, guys? And so picture, you need to really picture a two-year-old, and you come home, and you're like, where's my little angel or my little prince? And they're hiding because they did something wrong, and they know it. And it's sort of comical, it breaks your heart too, right? Like, this is the picture we're supposed to get. God, who's God, humans whom he created out of clay, to be in relationship to him, have now lost that ability. And the whole rest of the story is an unfolding of what's God going to do? What are they going to do? How is this going to work? And it's not really a pretty story in many places, but so we got that reminder because Christmas is a direct tie back to that. Direct tie back. I love that picture in Isaiah 11. The weaned child will put their hand on the viper's den. Do you remember the curse? So here's the curse. The curse is the main thing that drives the plot, right? Not just that humanity is estranged from God, but they live now under this futility and this frustration that their choices wrought upon them. And again, as a parent, you remember that, right? The child does something really silly. They live with the consequences. And that's kind of, you know, part of your story is helping them through that circumstance, whatever that looks like. When they're 2, it's pretty simple. When they're 16, less simple. When they're 45, I don't know, I haven't lived that yet, but I imagine it gets a little more complicated as time goes on. But the curse was that the snake and the human would be at each other's throats. The human is going to eventually, the seed of the woman will eventually triumph, bruising the head of the snake. The snake will wound the heel of the human, the offspring of the woman. But this picture in Isaiah of the weaned child putting your hand on the viper's den is probably the most poetic, like tying the symbols in the story together. We probably miss that, right? Because we're not good readers. We're not paying attention to what we're reading. But it's this very beautiful promise of restoration. Evil will be no more at some point. Not just suffering erased, but evil itself. You can stay safe by avoiding things today. There will be nothing to avoid then. The snake will be the plaything of the child. So anyhow, I want you to get excited about that. I want you to go home, take the next year to read the story, get involved in it, become more aware of the symbolism. Delight yourself, take joy in how these things play themselves out. But I wanted to point just to 2 things in the gospel part, our Christmas story. If we were reading or listening in Greek, which is what the New Testament was written in, there's this word that means word. It means the spoken word. And we heard that with the angel. Mary's response when the angel said, "You will have a holy child. It'll be the Son of God." And Mary says, "Let it be according to me. Let it be to me according to your word, according to what you've spoken, according to the statement, the word." But before that, the angel had said, your cousin Elizabeth, an old lady who's never had children before, was called infertile, is now 6 months pregnant. Because with God, no word, it's the same Greek word, no word will be impossible. And we live today in an age in which not just stories, but words themselves have gone down, like their stock value has gone down tremendously. We don't place a lot of confidence in words, whether that's something that somebody says, whether it's something we read. We've let the postmodern insight tell us that words are arbitrary, they're empty, they're meaningless. A word can mean anything you want. And that's what we sort of live by. We live by that truth. Our culture does. You can be anything you want. Words can be anything they want. It doesn't matter. Depends on how you define is. I'm like, really? I thought is was fairly straightforward. Like, some words are complicated. Is isn't. You'll have to go trace down that historical allusion. I'm not going to give that to you. We live in a world that's lost its faith and confidence in words, and yet this is how God is speaking to you, through words. And ironically, the words have come about now in a revenge through propaganda and through the dark side of social media. And words are exerting this repressed power over us. You know, that's an aside, but so the angel says, there's no word impossible for God. And Mary says, let it be to me according to the word. The angel says to the shepherds, today is born for you a Messiah, the Christ child. And the shepherds say, let's go look at these words that the angels have revealed to us. Again, if you're reading in Greek, you'd hear this same word for word showing up. And we didn't read there, but later in that passage, the shepherds return having told Mary and Joseph, that there was an angel chorus talking about Jesus, their baby. And Mary pondered all these words and kept them in her heart. So here's the thing I want to share with you. The shepherds, they heard the word and they said, let's go check it out. Let's check this word out. And you should check the word out. If it is not for you, the nothing is impossible to God word, it could be. I'm telling you that. I'm not an angel, sorry, but I'm telling you that. You can go check that out. Secondly, Mary receives this word and she just holds it like she did the Spirit-given child. And she lets it incubate in her. She carries it to full term. Mary treasured these words in her heart. And that too is an appropriate response for us today. If you don't know the story, you won't know what's going on. If you give yourself over to the story, the word, as Jesus said later when he was a man, the word will set you free. And that's worth talking about. That's worth spending some time on.